by a line of clock. But once I gained up like this, I mean, had discussions with them. There with transport. We, I think in a few minutes time, we should be starting to wait for the technical people to lower these two things overhead for purposes of projecting the slide on them. We have contacted them, they are on their way. Hope they should be here in a minute so that we will could start. Where the Auditor General Office is going to be in charge. Welcome National Treasury. Today, unlike yesterday, no presentation, no question. We now expect both of you now to make contributions now to assist in better preparing us for the battles ahead. So please feel free to make a contribution. So the Deputy Auditor General, maybe if we could wait for some few minutes and see what happens. Otherwise, the people are supposed to be on the way coming. Comrades, I'm sure you all have copies of the program. And as you can see, National Treasury people, the 26th is that bringing on unauthorized expenditure, regular expenditure, as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and supply chain management. That is next week Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, that is when we now starting with the unauthorized expenditure of various departments. You can see trade and industry, presidency, home affairs, transport. And then after that is the 9th and the 10th on the unauthorized expenditure, because about 11 or 12 departments so far were not able to do them on a single day. So divided them into three. But I'm sure Tombi will still send me a formal letter on all of these, so that they formally a communication to the next Tuesday, please, on this next Wednesday, on this Friday, that a lot of people could be informed in that. Alright, thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, colleagues from the Office of the National Accountant General. We're not playing musical chairs. This is jazz for today. So I'm going to have a little bit of fun in this chair for today. We have until 1 o'clock, but I think we'll just see how far we get with the key matters that we've got to cover. My proposal is that we work through the elements of what would make up a good oversight committee, as was stipulated by APAC, as well as included in the oversight model. We can just then discuss some of those elements. Then we could look at the elements of the strat plan for the fourth parliament scope and try and see to what extent those objectives remain relevant for this one and have a discussion. So this is really a workshop. Let's discuss as much as we want and need to. It's not often that we have an opportunity to work through this in as great detail as we have today. They should have a presentation that's got a cover that looks like this stipulated. I hope everybody's got a copy. While we struggle together on the screen. Okay, not everyone has a copy. That. So yeah, do you want to get to Honourable Singh? Okay. Oh, it's not in color. Okay. But lead by example. Okay. All right. Well, it's on the screen now. If we take, maybe just go ahead to the next slide. We've taken some of the elements that were placed in the oversight model, as well as what AHEC has prioritized. But in preparing for this, I came across this book, which I know Honourable Smith will know very well, which I'm hoping we can revise in terms of using it throughout APEX and SCOPAS, or just through SCOPAS right across the country. So if you look at the first bubble, the very top, so at 12 o'clock, talks to one of the key attributes being a committee that's got its powers clearly granted, clearly articulated, its mandate and role clearly understood by all that interact with it. And being given adequate time and opportunity for its members to meet and handle the affairs that are supposed to be dealt with them in the context of their mandate. The next part was also to the investment in building the capacity of its members and ensuring that its members understand not only their own role but also how it is they are to collaborate with other oversight structures and other role players in the system as well. Just as we spoke about yesterday when we spoke about the skills issues in many of the public sector institutions, we mentioned that it's one thing to invest in the capacity of people who are supposed to fulfill a particular role, but quite a different matter if we are able to ensure that they're given the ability to stay in that role and gain traction on the things that they ought to do. So one of the things we've got to think about is the continuity of membership and ensuring that people who are serving on any committee are able to indeed gain traction that comes with continuity. A committee ought to be supported by a competent and professional support in the sense of their oversight or their secretariat, who would have the legal and research capability that are required to ensure that they can fulfill their role with excellence. My experience with this committee, and I think a few others in Parliament, is that this is an area that we need to continue to strengthen. There are pockets of excellence. It's something that just needs to continue to invest in and ensure that we gain benefits out of having a competent and stable secretariat to support the committee. Please feel free to stop me with questions and input as we go along. One of the attributes relates to efficiency in terms of having clear plans in place. We've got to ensure that we have a plan of action that all members are supportive of, and one against which we can be measured at the very end. And this would indicate that over and above your five-year planning scenario, we would need to sit down and look at where we are in any given year and identify areas of priority. And I guess with as many reports as this committee would need to deal with in terms of the financial statements, the annual report, and then other reports that the Office of the Auditor General and the National Treasury ask you to deal with or table for your attention or are dedicated to you through the National Assembly, you would need to be quite clear about when and how you prioritize your work. Otherwise, we'll run the risk of running around and not really hitting the big ticket items. The innovation around how oversight is then conducted becomes important if we are to be effective. We've got to think about how we do oversight visits, if we do oversight visits, but how and when. And again, it's about prioritization, it's about collaboration with other role players so that we get the maximum impact from the things that we choose to do. Constructive working relationships, not just with members within the committee, is critical, but also with other role players, such as the National Treasury, the Office of the Auditor General, Audit Committee, as well as other committees within this Parliament, other committees with the ACOP, other committees in the relevant legislatures in the provinces. The relationship with the media is something we would need to think about in terms of how we move our public mandate being public representatives, and it's something we need to think about and strategize around so that we get the maximum impact out of having access to the media, get media to communicate the key things we want citizens to know, the key things we want other role players to be firmly aware of, but ensure that they are reported upon appropriately. Cooperation from the executive authorities is something we need to think about in terms of how much more effectively we can get cooperation and support from executive authorities on the matters that we deal with and want them to attend to in their relevant portfolios. at the end of the term, and perhaps the practice we ought to establish during the course of the year, is to have a self-assessment of our performance, so that at least we can see where we are relative to the agreed upon destination and what adjustments we need to make. The other element then is to maybe think about having somebody else facilitate that for us as well, just to get an external view on where things are and how we can best improve. One of the things I do for fun is I like to run, and it becomes quite important to have other people give you feedback when they leave you addresses and you can't catch up, because otherwise one becomes complacent about where things are. As we train for races, we've got to take it in steps and constantly evaluate where things are. That's an analogy that I often use, even when we have a conversation about the status of building institutional capacity for the state. Clean audit is a key destination. Let's accept that all of us start from different points, and we've got to move firmly toward that destination and continually get support from those who can help us, collaborate with those who are available to us, but stay on the course, even in the in the context of disappointment, and even in the context of obstacles and struggles. And if I look at many of these attributes, it really talks to that element. It shows that we know where we're going, we have the resources and capacity to support us in our journey, we collaborate with other players that can help us and work with us most effectively. We prioritize the things that are important because we can't do everything. And know that, of course, we're fighting at different places, at different types of committees, at different types of role players, but ultimately have the comfort of knowing that we have one common destination, which is to improve the levels of financial management, of effective management of the resources that government is entrusted with. Are there any questions on these attributes so far? Okay,
here's Adam. So if I can just comment on one of them specifically, I just wanted to say that this committee is a very powerful committee, and therefore it's got a strong message that it can communicate to the world. So when it comes to the press and the media, I would suggest that the committee maybe at some stage debate some of the key issues that they would like to highlight. Of course, they have very broad a spectrum of work that they need to do, and all of that is important, but there might be four or maybe five key areas that they would like to focus on during their tenure. And it might be things like unauthorized irregular expenditure, it might be big projects like Plaza or something, whatever it is, because there's always going to be present when this committee meets. You can always find a way of highlighting areas that you have chosen. It does not necessarily have to be bad that you focus on the bad. It can be to compliment some departments when they have done really well. But if there's a specific message that this committee would like, I'm just saying that, you know, you have a lot of power. So if there's a specific message that you would like to get out as a committee, not us, not as a specific political party, then that bullet or bubble dealing with the media becomes very important.
Thank you very much, the Council General. Any other input on these attributes? Yes, Chair?
Yes, I just want to, on the first bubble, the very first one is strategy, just to share my own little experience around that. Very often you hear people asking, does COPA have team or not? I think it's very important because it talks to how the public perceives us and also how they understand the separation of power. That if somebody has been found guilty of financial irregularities, SCOPA should take action. And yet in reality that's not our area. We can't discipline people because we don't appoint civil servant.
and we are a committee of parliament, we can't have powers that parliament does not have. It is an area that I'm sure members will come to experience over and over again. But the reality is that in relation to the current configuration of powers and sphere, I think that the committee does its best and reports to Parliament, and so far has always had adequate support from Parliament to do so. But it's a bit of a tricky area from time to time.
And maybe whilst talking about tricky areas, one we should find space to reflect upon is the role of SCOBA insofar as identifying the barriers towards effective cooperative governance. In the context of having these three spheres of government and you've got support and oversight responsibilities that cut across, and yet the engagement that SCOBA would have tends to be limited to the national departments. And it would be good to find a way to reflect on that, because yesterday when we were talking about, when you were presenting, a few questions related to municipalities. And naturally, as members of SCOBA, you are also citizens, there are things you see, you also have other experiences, having played different roles within government and oversight in the different spheres. It would be interesting to figure out how SCOBA plays a role in driving effective cooperative government throughout the state. Okay, there be no further input on this. Can we move on to the next conversation, well, the next part of our conversation? this slide is really a summary of the strategic objectives that are sitting in this document. We're all familiar with the document. Do we all have it? Yeah. Okay. If we move to page 4 of the document, I've just listed the headings. The first core objective for the fourth parliament so far, and this is really an exercise to reflect on what has been done in the past, what was intended to be done, and how far we went, but also to start to inform your thinking about what this term ought to look like. So the first strategic objective that was set for the fourth parliament so far related to ensuring that there was improved cooperation with portfolio committees. And this was done in recognition that whilst portfolio committees played a different role, there were many opportunities to collaborate, and with the intention to deepen oversight. Okay. Should be, hey. Maybe I should start, maybe the fine should be mine initially, because the chairman often starts by reminding all of us to switch off our phones and telling us his phone is off. So I'll put something in the wiki first. Okay, can you please all make sure that our phones are off indeed? maybe can I ask a question, especially those who were in the portfolio committees of last term, in terms of how they experienced the collaboration with SCOBA, given where they were? Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, I suddenly realized what I was saying when I saw the back of your head jerk when I said it, so But as a member of the Select Committees on Finance and Appropriations in the last term, I don't remember any coordination or any contact with SCOPE at all. But perhaps I'm wrong, Mr. Chairman, correct me quickly.
Are there any others who would be able to reflect on how they would have interacted with SCOPE? We've had some, he says no, there wasn't such. Anyone who did experience it? Okay,
Chair. Yeah, we, in terms of our standing practice, whenever we have hearings of a particular department, we religiously invite the portfolio committee to attend. And yes, some instances there will be attendance. In some instances, the chairpersons would come and actively participate. In some instances, they would not be there. They would just be a member. But as the president said, we wanted to improve on that because that is the barest minimum that we have always done. Was there any program to do that? No. Personally, I've always considered that such an exercise would probably require the office of the House Chairperson responsible for committee. And I have on one or two occasions raised this element in our meeting of Chairperson. But I don't think that there's any deliberate action to try to think how do we practically address it. And with the NCOP committee, I think he's right. We live in that manner.
Madam Chair, I feel kind of like I'm back in the Select Committee because Honourable Gorty is quite right. The Select Committees do tend to be left out of a hell of a lot of stuff, and I'll take it upon my shoulders to remind us that they do exist and that they are a vital part of Parliament. Thank you.
Thank you for that input. Maybe let's reflect on the reason why it's important to interact with the portfolio committee and the select committee. We spoke a bit earlier on about the cooperative governance challenges. We also, I think if you look at the page 4, there was an indication that it was important to have collaboration with other committees, be they the National Assembly or in the NCOP, so that we could share information on what is in the various reports that are available to us, and provide for ongoing monitoring and oversight of departments. Is that something that members would like to see be effective? The element about ongoing monitoring throughout the cycle, as well as the element about cooperative governance.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, so to answer your question, of course it's ideal to have ongoing monitoring and oversight. And some committees, we certainly those that I said, we introduced a quarterly meeting with the department. See, I think when I last served in SCOPE many, many years ago, Chairperson Gordy, we were the ones that started this thing. I think the reality now is that, number one, members of Parliament outside of SCOPE are terrified of finances. That's where we must start. They're just terrified of finances. So I think the practice of inviting chairpersons was a good start, but I don't think that's been necessary. The reality is the chair comes, he listens, and he's not going to come back until 18 months later. Because that's when Scopa probably is next week to see that committee. So the chair will come four times or three times in his term. I think what needs to be done, and I'm not sure how practical it is, but I'm just throwing it there, Chairperson Gordon. Government has got taxes. What I do think we need to do is to schedule once a quarter joint portfolio scope cluster meeting where we need to sit and say these are the finances or the financial position for the year. At the committee level, I mean, yesterday I left here and I went to sit in a joint committee of justice and correctional services together with Ingrid Women and Children or somebody like that to interact questively. And I do think that we might need to do that because really calling the chairperson to a hearing hasn't served the purpose in the last 4 years, certainly from where I'm sitting. So maybe we should look at, in our own program, once a quarter, have a joint portfolio committee meeting where we do the kind of things that the accounting general is talking about. What are the real issues? Now, just a practical example, and in the ANC, for instance, we have cluster study groups where we set up a cluster and look at the issues that are cross-cutting in that cluster, whether it's security or whatever. I think we need to do that at a multi-party portfolio policy level, even if it's once a quarter, where we are able to meet with all the chairs and say, these are the issues that are arising out of whatever that cluster might be. Because the intention really should be to educate other portfolio committees on the importance of financial oversight. Currently, that is important. So more than us thinking that they're going to do it for us, maybe we need to educate them on the importance of it. So I think really, in terms of cooperation, we can continue with inviting them, but I'm afraid it's not going to take us very far because many, many of the chairs and members, for that matter, are brand new to Parliament, never mind to Scope. So it takes us 6 years to understand Scope as business. Somebody that comes and sits once a quarter or once every 18 months is hardly going to be able to do it. So there's a need for corporations here. I just think that maybe at some level, chairperson, whether it's at a chair level or at an inter committee level, we might need to sit and have just a discussion rather than a hearing with the department about to sit and say, the justice cluster or peace and security cluster, these are real challenges. Because they tend to be the same across the board in the cluster. Unauthorized expenditure, whatever the case might be. So that's my proposal in terms of cooperation.
Thank you very much for that proposal. Yes, Chair.
Yes. Oh, I don't think the improvement to what we currently have. And I'm sure between now and when we have our strategic session in October, we can continue to mull over the idea. I'm just thinking on my feet, once we have your general report and we have a sense of what we want to do and have identified the challenge, maybe that's where we can start. Say, look, this is what we have and these are things we're going to be dealing with. Maybe you could focus on it. And when we have, say, quarterly meetings, people already know what were the issues that we identified. Something like that. I think we can work on the implementation. How best can we do that?
Okay, thank you very much. That will deal with the, I'm just clarifying the proposal, Honourable, so is it really about the portfolio committees within Parliament within the National Assembly, or would it capture the certain committees in the NGOP as well?
I was speaking about the NA. The select committees, I think, is a better challenge, but those that have served in the NCOP can better. Because I think they cover about 7 or 8 different committees. I don't know that there's a committee that is specific to financial oversight. But of course, if there are members that we can bring from there, the good work, but I was just thinking of NA members. It's going to be very difficult to get 8 committees together, I would imagine, Gordy, but I do think that we should at least have some attempt, even if it's at the chairperson level, we could do that. But if the NCOP are able to be accommodated, I think it would make it even more useful, sense.
Thank you for taking it, of course. The NDFP does indeed have specialist committees on finance and appropriations, two separate committees. And members of the finance committee, select committee, are members of the appropriations committee. So the number of people involved is in the region of 10 people. It's not like the other select committees, which are cluster committees and deal with a number of portfolios. The finance and appropriations are pretty exclusive.
Maybe to be more specific around the engagement of the House Chairperson to facilitate some of these processes on collaboration, are there things we should think about doing differently? Are there, is though a key input in driving the collaboration efforts?
Well, I was mentioning that office because the committee of the NA under his direct supervision. But I think what Commissioner has suggested does not exclude the possibility that we could ourselves initiate the process. Already the chairperson of the Appropriations Committee has made for sure that there is need for us and his committee to work a little more closer. I think for me a starting point would be us taking the initiative to see how it goes.
Okay, go ahead, yeah.
I'm also thinking as well, honorable members, we might gain a bit of knowledge as well from the performance audits that we have, because remember they are more department specific, although they might be referred to the audit general, maybe there's a performance audit that affects correctional services, for example. I think for me also that's another opportunity for collaboration, because we might have a joint hearing on a particular report without it being dealt separately by separate committees. I think that's one area that you might also expect in terms of enforcing this kind of cooperation.
National Treasury?
Chair, I just want to link up to what the Honourable Member said. I think there's a need for the various committees to work closer, but I also think that the guidance that is being provided by this committee to provinces is not strong enough currently. So once you have collaborated with your colleagues in the portfolio committees and you've decided on key areas that should be monitored, I think maybe guidance must be given to provincial SCOVAs as well, that they must focus on the same areas. It might be done at the moment, but I don't think it's done in enough detail. I don't think the committee meets enough times with the provincial counterparts, and maybe not just impart knowledge, but also just help them to focus on specific areas that are important to this committee. Make sure that it's carried through to the provinces as well.
I agree there. I think this is important. I don't know. I mean, I really speak out of correction. I don't see any of my colleagues that were in Kaohsiung prior to this. You know, from where I'm sitting, it almost sounds like SCOVAs in the province meet once a year, as opposed to us meeting once a week or twice a week. I mean, we only have SCOPA when they're doing the annual reports. Now, we wouldn't be able to do what you're saying, sir, if we do that. But we might, and I don't know, at an APAC level, we might have to have a standard method of work across the country. Unless you have a standard method of work, it's going to make this difficult. I don't know why they meet once a year, or I might be exaggerating, but certainly in Gauteng they don't seem to meet as much as we meet here. that might be the starting point, that we say to impact aid, I mean to whoever, monthly or whatever the case might be, currently is really ad hoc. And I thought that the genesis of APEC was to do that type of thing, not just the theory, but also the practice, and I think we've failed in terms of the practice. You can't have a legislature where talk for me on the year. And here we meet every term, and then expect their cooperation. So I agree with you, and those that would lead us in APEC maybe should be thinking about this type of thing. Because you see, the other reality is that there are certain battles. It's very difficult for the scope of the thing that is going to go impose on the Northwest. That's the reality. You're not going to do it. So it needs to be done. I think you're right. In our stress plan, we might have to think about how do we, first of all, get some sort of uniformity in how we operate as open across the country. And then that might help us. Because for us to give guidelines and to impose, we'll be seen as a big brother. And it will just create resistance. The other reality is, outside of National and the Western Cape, all have the scope with the ANC people. Now, if Gordy just does it, and I know that it shouldn't be like that, but that's the reality. If Gordy does it, it's going to be very difficult for ANC chairpersons to adopt it, because they might be thinking it's coming from the opposition. So that's what I'm saying, at an APEC level, we might have to look at it and get people to understand that it's not party political, but that it is about financial oversight. So I think that the work that needs to be done, I agree. I think there needs to be cooperation, and I do think that those of our members that serve on APEC should be also putting it on the agenda. Not just the theoretical training body, but also the uniformity in terms of work method. Thank you, sir.
And I don't think
the
come to
United
States. In addressing that collaboration with the provincial focus, is there not a role for NCOP as well? Okay.
I think that some of the members would be aware the NCOP dynamic is quite different from the National Assembly in terms of what the rules are saying. For example, the Appropriations Committee and the Select Committees, their focus is largely local government and provincial. The Appropriations is largely dealing with provinces. And then the Finance Committee to the local government. Now, in the context of, as you're saying, how maybe the NCOP can interface with the provincial scopers, I think Honorable Smith is quite correct as well. Their peak period in the provinces, the scopers, is only around September, October. They dedicate 2 weeks only on sports, and that's it. Then after that, they do totally with other letters. So for the rest of the year, there's no scope activity as such. So I'm not sure really, you know, as to how one can find a way in which they can be uniformity across the board. But I think there is a view, perhaps maybe there must be some kind of an initiative done to create that kind of uniformity. But currently, the practice is totally different. The other thing as well that compounds the problem maybe more is that in some provinces, they are not even dealing with the reports that are currently like the 2012-2013 financial year. I know in the report what they might be in 2011-2012 as well. So even the cycle of oversight in their part is a year later than the other provincial legislatures. So in that way, it becomes a totally different situation.
So I guess we go back to the method of work and working with APEC. Jay, do you want to say something?
Thank you, Chair. In some of the work methods of the committee, maybe the committee should consider, identifying those departments or those institutions that are, you know, that have serious financial management problems and that are regularly qualified and so forth. And what around, their work method should concentrate on those particular departments, by calling them in regularly, looking at their aggressive plans and so, particularly exerting some kind of pressure on departments to ensure that they improve their financial management, as much as the committee is responsible for, is required to exercise oversight over all institutions, but maybe prioritizing those type of institutions that that have serious financial management problems.
Thank you for that. Are there any other opportunities to drive effective cooperation with other oversight structures? any other elements that would help us to drive it in this regard? Okay. Can I move on to objective number two? So we're confirming that objective number one remains relevant. It remains a key challenge in terms of finding the best tools, the best leaders to drive it up. Okay. The second one, involve members of the executive and scopa hearing. One of the key attributes of an effective oversight committee is that they would have developed the type of relationships that allow them to enjoy active support from the executive authorities to help them ensure that there's cooperation from accounting officers. Is this something that we would want to focus on? I see some heads nodding. Honorable Vishal Sabalala.
Yeah, I think we should. It is critical. If we see our role as not that of a policeman, we are not policemen, we are here to enhance quality and effective usage of the resources that departments have been given. So much as we think it's critical to have that relationship with committees, it is critical to have this executive. Because at the end of the day, if there's no cooperation from their level, we will not get cooperation at any other level. But what is critical for me is that they don't come here, you know, at the last minute when they come to be told that this is what you did wrong, but to build a relationship that capacitates them so that they know what is expected of them and do it accordingly. So I think it is important.
Okay, go ahead.
I think to add to my colleague over there, whilst we shouldn't be seen as policemen, I don't think we should lose sight of the accountability side of the argument. And I think having the executive appear in front of us is part of that. I think it's vitally important that we insist that key members of the executive are present at our meetings when we require them to be here. That includes the minister, to not only to display to them that there is a need for accountability, but also for, I think it's very important for the South African public at large to know that accountability exists. That in actual fact, there is a body that can call a minister to account, you know, on their performance. And I think that's important to give our people confidence in our system. In actual fact, there is a body that can call a minister to account, because so much of our media reports that the ministers are just above law and carry on and do whatever they want. I think it's important to show that we can do that. But I agree with my colleague that we need to establish a good relationship so that we don't close the door and try and catch bees with honey rather than vinegar. So, but I think it's absolutely right. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I just want to add on what my colleague said. So I definitely emphasize that the Constitution allows members of parliament to this appeal, but to call anybody to come in before parliament. So it's not like a it's something that will be forced. It's our right as members of parliament to call anybody to come and account on anything, especially public funds. Thanks.
Okay,
I don't think it's really a subject for debate in a bigger sense, but I'm just concerned about the wording of the objective itself, because the executive authorities and the executive is not the same thing. The executive is indeed members of the cabinet. And so to call the executive authorities has been fudging us and talking about directors general and all the officials as opposed to the executive. So it may be a thing that I think we all know what we mean. So there might be a small wedding problem there. I mean, the portfolio committees, the select committees, they all call the ministers to account. I mean, we had ministers, in fact, in previous parliament, we chased officials away because the minister wasn't there. And they said, go away, bring your minister. We didn't ask some junior official to come and account to parliament. So I think that's standard practice in committees, and it's up to the committee to decide whether they're going to have the director general without the minister and so on. So there might be a way, but I think we all agreed that accountability is a part of our constitution and parliament.
Honourable?
Yeah, just to say that to the experience of the last 5 years, I think by the time the parliament came to an end, I think it had already been institutionalized that whenever we're hearing by the ministers. And it has been interesting how in a number of occasions ministers have actually been very thankful that they came, because they got a different perspective to what they have been fed when they're in the office, when people are here. We've only had one spectacle of the minister sitting right at the back, saying, I'm not here to answer questions, that's for the accounting officer, it's not my, you know, it's not my responsibility, after some bit of time. But it was interesting, I think beginning of 2012, we went to Denmark, had a meeting with the public accounting committee there. In their situation is exactly the opposite. The minister sits here, the officials sit at the back, and the minister answers all the questions. Officials are there to assist him with notes, to refresh his memory, and to give additional information. That's the situation. But I think we've had this mixed triage. Sometimes the officials will come on the day, or the minister is not available, he's overseas, or there is a nation cabinet meeting, and then you have to weigh in, do we send them back, they are here, or do we continue, you know, that kind of thing. So, but that ministers are called upon to come when they are here, and that has already been institutionalized.
Okay. I agree, Chair. It's just a question to Mr. Gordy and others, but has there been interaction with the executive authority or the ministers around the importance of this? Now, I know that the AG meets with ministers on a regular basis. I think we might have to do the same thing. Now, or alternatively, when you as the AG go and see the minister, maybe you should invite the chairperson, because I think it's about relationship building. Otherwise we'll have this test of depending on the personality, whether I should come or not come, or how are you going to force me to come. So the need for them to be there, I think, is not debatable. It's about how we approach them, not seem to be working to embarrass them or undermine them. And I think one of the ways of improving is either for us to piggyback on, when I say us, I'm saying the chair of COPA, to piggyback on your interactions with the executive, or alternatively for the chair to consciously look for a meeting. I mean, as chairpersons of portfolio committees, we go to the minister. We say, look, we want to see you today, minister, and have that discussion. Maybe if it's not possible to piggyback on the AG, maybe Mr. Gordy should consciously arrange for a meeting with, and maybe we should follow what the Treasury is saying. Shouldn't we all 35 if we can't all of them in 1 year? But certainly Public Works, Correctional Services, those we know are perennial problem children. And we should then prioritize those and maybe ask the chair for not a delegation to go and have this interaction and to indicate to the minister why it's important for him or her to attend when their department attends, because it will make him or her sleep easier at night. So I think it's more than just putting it on this document, because that will probably antagonize or create the wrong impression. But let us consciously go and mobilize the support of the minister. Either when you do a chairperson with the AG, or for Gordy to do a conscious also on those that we would identify as portfolio as public account. So I think it is necessary, I think it's essential, so that we kick start on the right footing.
any suggestions, words of wisdom on this one, based on what you see?
No, Chair, we can just support the comment that has been made by the honourable members. I do think it's very important, as several of the members have pointed out, it's that personal relationship that gets you cooperation. It's always much better if you approach somebody in good spirit rather than when you summon them. However, that doesn't mean we mustn't be firm, because as soon as this committee gets one missed off the hook, then all the others are going to take a gap, not because they're scared or anything like that. It's just we're all very busy, you know, and if they feel that the importance of the committee is not high enough, then they might find excuses. But I do think the right approach is what several members have mentioned here, is to have a more cooperative spirit. And as soon as the executive authorities see that we want to, that the committee wants to assist them, that's when they'll be more amenable and more open to these kind of meetings.
Thank you for that input. I'm hearing a view that there is less focus on building relationships. This is still important. It is actually a given in terms of accountability. I think Honourable Smith said it's beyond question. I think I heard Honourable Kuno say that it's what drives accountability. If you look at those attributes we spoke about earlier on, they talk to the need to build effective relationships and find ways to gain support. And I think that roadshow would assist. That would really be a tactic to drive a particular objective. I'd like us to maybe just confirm what the objective would be. Is it to build, is it to gain support, or to get the executive authorities, the ministers, here? And I'll tell you why I want us to look at this. There's an opportunity to institutionalize again for the Parliament, because you've got to do that, but also to perhaps get it into the method of work, the standard method of work for APAC. So I'd like us to be clear on what we're saying. Is it just to gain support, or is it to get them into the hearings?
Something. The reason the sentence is the way it is involved is primarily because hitherto members of the executive were not involved or expected to come when they were hearing. So when that was written at the beginning of the parliament, it had to be that way because they were not involved before. So, but as Comrade Kuno has indicated, and I think that was the argument, that accountability does not stop with the officials, but the political leadership, because oversight is a political process in the first instance. It's not an administrative process, and the political head therefore takes final responsibility for whatever is there. So the issue, that's why when I look at on that first page on attributes of an effective oversight, executive authority support stroke accounting office cooperation, I underline support, because I think as committees we don't need their support, we need their cooperation the same way as we do on the accounting officers, because coming here is not necessarily a favor. Whilst I hear, I think what Comrade Vincent is talking to is at a tactical level, how do you do that, but at principal level is their responsibility to come and account, evolve them, because that's what was not happening. And I think Deputy Minister Obed Mapela, when he was the House Chair, assisted that process a lot, and the former Deputy President McClanton, in ensuring that ministers understand that they have a responsibility to come before SOAP. And like I said, we always had very, very positive feedback. And some ministers, like the Minister of Health, would actually respond to the minutest details in the department better than even some of the officials, showing the extent to which he's stood up with issues in the department.
May I suggest then that we retain the objective as worded here, which is to involve members of the executive, and even to say to call the executive authorities which is the minister, is against county officers. So executive authority is correct, if I... No? Okay. Okay, all right. I think we can look at the final detail, but okay, that's fine. But if we keep the objective as it currently is worded, given that we've had some success in the fourth parliament, we accept that this is a new parliament and we want to continue on this trend, one of the key tactics would be about ensuring that we build effective relationships, starting with a roadshow, but the wording of the objective would remain the same. Are we comfortable with that? Okay, yes, sir.
A possible suggestion on the membership on the wording is to and then use the word either ensure or encourage cooperation. Was that too harsh? Because they have to cooperate. So encourage or ensure cooperation. It's just a little bit more imperative than just to involve other things.
The proposal to elaborate on the point so that it goes on to say involve members of the executive in scope of hearings so as to ensure cooperation. Jeff?
Well, for me, having institutionalized it therefore cannot be put as if we're starting a process. I think we have something that talks to enhancing the cooperation. Instead of just the excellence, also include accounting officers, because then you're putting them in the same breath, not isolating the executive from the accounting officers, and merely saying in our way, the stakeholders that we work with from the executive arm would want to work in a cooperative manner.
So the objective would read to enhance cooperation of the executive members of the executive and accounting officers with SCOPA hearings. Or not so yeah, with SCOPA, cooperation with SCOPA. Okay? And it might feel like I'm laboring the point, but I want us to be clear on it, because if we're going to drive this, we all need to kind of be comfortable with what it is you're saying. Enhanced cooperation of members of the executive and accounting officers with SCOPA. Happy? Yes, sir.
Are we then removing, my proposal would be, let's remove hearings because it is limiting.
And then the tactics we've spoken about, and I'm sure you'll build on in the next session as well. Thank you very much. Let's move to objective number 3. Improve understanding by the media of SCOPA's plans and priorities. You have the media as a key component of our strategic objectives.
Chair, I alluded to it earlier. I think it's absolutely vital that the members of our public, our fellow citizens, know what we do and know that we are a body that holds the executive to account. And perhaps I feel that sometimes our message is not communicated effectively enough. We are there as the bulwark against corruption and all the things that can go wrong. I think it's absolutely essential that we rebuild on that relationship.
You know, in reflecting on this in the context of those attributes we spoke about, the key attribute here was about building positive relations with media. And it feels like improving their understanding is a tactic towards getting better value out of a relationship with them. So should the objective not be to improve or to develop positive relations with media and other stakeholders, but specific media, instead of this being the objective, instead of driving understanding being the objective? Happy? Yes, okay, go ahead, Alfonso General.
thanks to you. You know, this is something I'm quite passionate about. I do think if we are allowed to change things, I think we must change it slightly, the wording. We must never lose sight, much as the media will tell you that their job is to make sure that the truth gets out to the people and they want to empower the people by giving them knowledge. The first thing of most of the press, maybe apart from the FABC, but for all the other press, their job is to make money. They are commercial businesses. So they sell this, or they print the story that will bring in the most money. Now, this committee could play a vital part in giving assurance, just by the way of an example. The Auditor General in the audit report might talk about unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, wasteful expenditure. And we know there have been certain actions with it. Certain actions must be taken against certain officials. So it might provide comfort if this committee could then, because of the relationship that they build up with the media, they can report that we have interrogated this department. We are happy with the action that has been taken. Or we are not happy. We are insisting that the DG must go back and take further action, which will show that the committee are strong in their views, that they need to take certain action. But I'm just saying, because we didn't really have enough time to go into it yesterday, but if you look at something like fruitless and wasteful expenditure, where somebody was supposed to go to a training course, but on the day they got sick and they were rushed to the hospital, it might be a bit unfair to say money must be recovered from that official. You know, there's nothing, but, you know, just something happened. So in situations like that, the committee might say, we are happy. You know, you don't report in the newspaper that there's fruitless and wasteful expenditure because we're happy with the explanation. However, there's certain instances where a number of people were supposed to go on training and they just overslept, they had a big party the night before. Then the committee should insist, DG, you have not taken enough action. You cannot just condone these kind of expenditure. You must recover it from these officials. And then when we report to the press, they can see that as a committee, we are a strong committee. We take action. It might even give the press, and through the press, it will give the citizens of the country comfort to know that there's an oversight body that makes sure that these things are not just swept under the carpet. But I think the important thing is, if we can change the wording to say that the media must just not just understand the work of the committee, they must also have a personal relationship so that they can rely on the committee. If the committee says we have taken action, they can say we're comfortable, something has been done. Whether that action is to say more stronger action must be taken against an individual, or whether that action is simply to say we are happy with the explanation that has been given to us.
Pointing that the amendments talk to building effective relations with the media. Okay. I have Honourable Boy, and I'll come back to Honourable Lee.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Chair, that I can't be late. I have a few other meetings. Sir, my attitude is, I hear what you are saying, but also, I mean, you know, the social media. You should not just look at those other things. The social media also. What messages? If you don't send messages as corporate and talk to the people, definitely media will come and write what they think is sensational. But I would be in a position to be saying that, how do you make sure? But in a very transparent way, you talk to media upfront, you see. But if the Auditor General issues a statement and says, consultants have spent more than $1 million, that's the first place, and that's what the public buys. Now, it should not be, you see, one thing that government and the state should be aware is, when you get alienated from the broad public, from those that deal with counter-revolution, will immediately the space, and then when the space, those that are to do counter-revolution will come in and occupy, and continue insisting that there's corruption in that government, remove that government. So there should be a, how we talk as corporate, because it's a very sensitive and a very vital area, that how do you continue talking to the people to understand the workings of corporate and the workings of the Auditor General, so that there's a positiveness and appreciation that you are engaging the public, you are following up with all the institutions, you are doing your work, and this is within the ambit of your responsibilities. So there's nothing that says you are not transparent. But if we scope up for years, I mean, I'll tell you, if we are dealt with the arms deal in a very transparent way from day one, within SCOPA, we wouldn't have been here. 10 years down the line, we're going to the 20th year dealing with only one aspect of this government, which creates a bad impression that we are dealing with the arms deal. because they've not been communicating. The public seems not to understand what is exactly going on. It's only now that they have beginning to have a sense of how things have been going on within the armed state, you see. Now, when they wanted, both wanted to kill, I think there's something that has gone wrong, you see. And if we take that type of attitude here, and we don't talk, you know, you see the Kimberley problem for the coming years to come, without appreciation of the weaknesses within the system, or what is it that are your challenges. And for me, that will bring the alienation of government or the state. And when that happens, definitely so a lot of counter forces are going to come in, and this system will be gone, you see. And I'm saying that the transparency that we should talk about within this environment is, what messages do we want to send out for the public to appreciate that if there's weaknesses, like if we said yesterday, yeah, people do go and do procedural things, they do some misleads. Talk to that issue. It's nothing underground about it. It's a public thing. That if you don't have, you have got the necessary personnel, but it's not doing your properly, talk to that issue. Don't hide it, so that the public could be able to appreciate. But the more government don't talk to the public, but that's a weakness of the government. It doesn't communicate. Its corporate doesn't communicate. It sits here, it hides itself, and one day just talks and everybody thinks there's a disaster in this government. And I think that's the balance that we should talk to on how do we make use of that. Authoritatively, this person himself talks to media and keep them informed about the type of reports and things that are being done. Rather for them to sneak in here, think that there's an issue, or one opposition, or talks to them, and everybody thinks that the country is in a crisis. For me, that's one part that we must be able to counter in how we deal with this issue of communication within SCOPA itself. SCOPA is a very secretive organization. I must say so. Sitting in this government for 20 years, they are very secretive. They don't talk to the public. They talk to themselves around this table. And they deal with very important things that are affecting government.
Thank you very much for that contribution. Honorable Viz?
Yeah, Honorable Boy has said much of what I was thinking, but I'd like to go a little further because I'm really uncomfortable with this discussion, to be honest. The role of this committee or any committee of Parliament is not, should not be on how to influence the media. It should be being completely transparent, as Honorable Boy is talking about. So the media can see the truth and not make up stories, sensational stories. And so I really was very uncomfortable with the kind of discussion we were having just now about how do we influence the media, and I might be putting words into people's mouth, because that should not be. I, as a politician, will go out here and try and influence the media to my point of view, and so will Honorable Boy. And that won't change. So, as individuals, some of us already have very good relations with members of the media, and some perhaps not. That's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about here is the work of the committee being open, transparent, so people can see that the committee is doing its job fairly and holding people to account where there is a need, and where there's not a need, congratulating if people are doing a good job. So I'm, you know, it's not about setting up a spin doctor to spin the work of the committee so that people see how well we're doing. No, that's not what it's about, and I hope that's not what people are thinking, but I would suggest that people aren't thinking that. So to sum up, key to the media is that we operate transparently and we work hard, and we don't have one meeting every 3 months, and I think we have a chair who's driving us past too hard at the moment. But so that's not a problem. So and that we deal fairly with whoever it is that we're dealing with. And then as individuals and as political parties, we have our own relationships with media. We shouldn't come into this committee at all.
Yeah, I think the intent of that objective was to say that as a committee we need to be proactive and from time to time communicate information to the public that would assist in saying this is what we are doing, this is what we are seeing, because in almost all instances whatever coverage that the committee has is based on journalists voluntarily coming to our meetings, listening, going away and then writing their own story. So I think it was more about us being proactive and communicating
And I think maybe what is missing in that is the public, because our focus seems to be on the journalists who are around you. And yet our core function is to communicate to the public out there that this is the work that we're doing, this is what we're doing, assist in ensuring that there is clarity and understanding. If people are hysterical, it was because the facts say so, not because their perception. So I think maybe what we may need to end there is, yes, we need to interact with the media, create that relationship, but we need to talk as something that talks to communicate to the public as well. We have a communications division here in Parliament, which unfortunately is not as well staffed as they would love to. So you find that there is one communications officer assigned to maybe four or five committees. And I think that is what creates the problem. Otherwise, we do a lot of work, and there's a lot of opportunity for us to communicate information to the public, but then you then have, you know, capacity constraints and all that. But I'm just reading this last point today. This is the situation, but I'm sure we can work around that once we move forward.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to emphasize what Honorable Godi has said. In fact, I was going to talk about that, that we don't use the media that's here in Parliament, which I think will be the best to inform the public. For instance, there was a radio launch last time, Parliament radio launch last time, but I don't think it's used effectively as it should be. So I think these are some of the things that we need to be emphasizing, making sure that anything that you want to take to the public out there, we make use of what we have. Because I agree with what the Accountant General has said earlier on, that the media will sell what they want people to hear and all that. So the best thing for us to do is to make use of what we have, the communication strategies that we have here in Parliament. Okay.
Thanks, Chair. Just clarity, I'm thinking about this objective. Is this a scoper responsibility or is it a chairperson's responsibility? I'm asking these questions here because, you see, we all can't communicate the role of scoper. That's the role of the chairperson of the committee. Because if I go and communicate, I will have an ANC spin on it. Now, maybe the objective should be saying the chairperson must ensure, because let as it is, it gives all of a license and we will polarize and politicize it and we will go back to the pre-arms deal days, and I don't think we will survive, quite frankly. Members here don't know how bad it was. We won't survive it. So I think that objective to be very loose as it is. It should say that this is the responsibility of the chair, whoever the chair might be, because this thing must live beyond 2019. The chair must have a responsibility to market and to inform the community and the media on the work of SCOPA. As leaders of various political parties, we can go and differ or agree with the chairperson, but I don't think it should be the responsibility of SCOPA, because it will then give everybody a license to go and talk on behalf of the committee. So I think it must be changed, that it must say very clearly, the only official spokesperson is the chairperson. And he has a role to make sure that the plans, objectives, or whatever are communicated to the media. Those that come and visit us during our hearing then can give their own take on it as journalists, and we don't stop them. But in terms of the official line, it should be there of the chairperson, and we should be saying to him, this is what we're mandating you to do as a committee.
Thank you, Chair. You know, this thing of media is very complicated, and I doubt that we'll ever reach a point of agreement, so we'll probably need to make quite sizable compromises on it. I understood that it is just more than the utterances that will be made in public. There are media houses that are very well known and well established. I mean, we are going through an orientation here with the two APEC and all the new members. Just on the competencies of the work of this committee. Now, I mean, obviously, you're going to have, you know, very uninformed journals, all due respect to them, who are just going to read the report and sensationalize it and spin it as they deem fit in order to advance their commercial interests. I think that what is important is we have a responsibility for the credibility of this committee to engage media houses on the core functions and the relevant terminologies, core concepts and everything that is relevant so that they can be able to, you know, report from an informed position. So what they do beyond that, well, that's their own story. But I really understood that you were saying we need to capacitate the relevant media, and I think we'll know. I mean, media houses will generally think the same journalists to come and cover SCOPA because of its complexity. So if we can build relations with the media houses as opposed to individuals on capacity and on the core functions of the committee, they may then begin to report the work of the committee from an informed position. All that is things of the chairman, and obviously we're going to have different views, but I think that the gravity of the work of this committee really is specialized and we need, you know, media houses to come on board in terms of the capacity.
Thank you, Chair. I think I want to agree. I don't think that the media is friend to anybody. It's a capitalist system. I'm sorry for the language, but that's what capitalism is. Money talks and bullshit walks, and it talks every day. And that's the bottom line of the media. They are in business. It's an industry. So no matter how much we might want to appease them, it's going to be a sticky relationship. And I think that's why I want to support the thing that the chair must speak on behalf of the committee. But for me, that is in a sticky. As long as the chairperson himself will be honest to reflect the different views that sit here. Because it's good to say the chairman should speak if we're all in agreement on the same thing. But there will be times when we are not in agreement, you know. And then he mustn't go up there and say, it is the committee's view. Because that's what I'm fighting injustice. It was never my view. It must not be said what wasn't my view is my view. So I think we must just all be mature and manage it. But we are going to have a sticky relationship with the media. But that the chair should speak on our behalf, I think we understand another part about the media. It protects us too. Because if they're going to be individually talking, they will put you in such jeopardy where they will say, you said SCOPA is doing this when it did not. So it's fine if it is one person for me, as long as that one person also will be mature about it. But we should not try and make friends with the media. It will never happen. These people are nobody's friends. They are there to make money and to be sensational, especially the South African media. It's just sensational and there's nothing we can do about it. I think maybe the curriculum needs to be changed at some stage. It's not our fault, but something went wrong somewhere in the training of journalists in this country. Because it is nothing but sensationalism. And you cannot try and achieve the sensationalism. They will always look for sensationalism.
Right, let me try and summarize what we've heard, and if I've misunderstood, please do say so. We want to change the objectives to read as follows. To improve the understanding of the public of the work of SCOPA. The key things, so that's the objective. The key things we're going to do are to recognize that we must drive for accurate, fair and transparent reporting of our work by the media. One of the areas we've got to deal with is ensuring that we educate them, we build relationships with them, and we'll do that primarily through the chairperson, given the nature of this committee. The next element is about social media. That becomes one of the tools for us to communicate and educate the public about the work of school. So outside of the media, traditionally known, there's this element about social media, which Honorable Boy talked about. The other element for Honorable Kumo was about using Parliament's existing communications capacity and strategies as, again, one of the tools. So we've got three sort of elements to this. One is about working with the media, educate them, work directly through the chairperson, ensure that we build firm understanding so that we achieve fair and transparent and accurate reporting of our work. Two is to drive social media as a tool. And three is to use Parliament's existing capacity. The key objective remaining to improve understanding of the public
about our work. Is that a fair reflection of where we are on this happiness? Okay. Can we move to objective number four then? Improve the effectiveness of our oversight visits. When we looked at those attributes of an effective oversight committee, oversight visits was one of the areas that we understood to be a key component of our work. Is it something we would want to continue with and prioritize to this level? Okay, Chen.
Yeah, if I can just say some few of that. We realized that calling departments to come to Parliament and talking things over 3 hours and they go away, still there's something of enhancing. And it became even more relevant using the performance report of the Auditor General on the provision of infrastructure in the departments, provincial departments of health and education. Report indicated, you know, some delays, poor structures, inflation of escalation of prices because of delays and all that. And as a committee, we then visited a number of hospitals and a number of schools in various provinces, one of which was the Kimberley Mental Hospital, as well as the Zola Jablani Hospital in Gauteng. And our experience from these was that it was an important and an effective tool of oversight, in the sense that we not only spoke about things in theory, but we were there with the officials, with MECs, and asked them questions about things before us. And in almost all instances, subsequent to those visits, we've seen some added pace in the way work is being done. Same thing with the Department of Public Works. They came here, went to the head office, had a meeting there with them and the minister, called them back to Parliament. So it added a way of saying, look, we are going to speak with you until we fix this thing, rather than just come here for 3 hours, you go away, we'll see you after 12 months or 8 months. So our experience in the fourth Parliament really was that it was quite an important exercise in the oversight work. Just like the compensation funds, you know. Our visit to their head office was an eye-opener for us. To just have a look at, if you go in there, you could understand why they got this labor. Because you saw the physical environment within which they were operating. But our being there and them taking us through all the various sections also put added pressure on them. I see now they are advertising that they want to go paperless. I mean, the kind of file they have there would fill this room. And yet they're supposed to be working through them on a daily basis. So I think oversight, yeah, it has been very effective. I think it's something that we need to continue.
Thank you, Chair. Oversight is really important, and as public bearers, office bearers, the main thing that we are supposed to be doing is to oversee the government. And as departments come here and go, there are things that we won't understand as they explain. So it's important for us to go and actually go where they're working and understand what Honorable Gold has said earlier on. So it's actually a fact-finding mission, and it has been oversized through all the different parliaments that we've had, especially the last parliament. So I don't think any committee really should be sitting here only in parliament. It's important for us to go out there and actually see for ourselves and make us understand things better. So I agree with that objective as it is there. Thanks.
Chair, I just want to say, I think the word might be
might need to change slightly in my view. I think the role of the committee is to exercise oversight. One of the ways that they do it is by doing site visits. It might look a bit self-centered if we say a core objective is to improve on our oversight visits. Maybe we should say improve on the effectiveness of oversight, of oversight role that we play, and we will do that by going on site visits. It's just a slight change of wording, I think.
Effectiveness of oversight through effective oversight visits. Okay, would that work? Honourable Liz, and then I'd like us to move on to have a conversation about how we make them more effective. Okay, go ahead, Honourable Liz.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, I was going to actually deal with that. So that's fine because they can be particularly ineffective, and I've been on, and that's one of the things that NCOP is very strong on, and I've seen most corners of this country on so-called oversight visits. Some of them have been very, very good. Others have been a total waste of time because we were not able to actually get to see what we should have seen. I'll give you an example of a good one. We went to North West, we were looking at traditional grant expenditure, and there was money paid for a library, and we were prevented from going to this library day after day, and eventually we just got in the car and we drove ourselves to the library. Well, there wasn't a single brick there, let alone the building. And so, yes, the effectiveness depends on us. We can be brushed aside by officials and by MECs and ministers, and it will become a waste of time. But we need to be strong, and fortunately the chairs of the Appropriation and Finance said their committees were strong. And they said, no, we are not going to take ourselves to this particular one. It's one example.
I think the suggestion from the accountant general is is correct. Well, I'm not sure whether improve was the best word to use, and I'm not sure if enhance. I would prefer enhance the effectiveness of oversight by amongst others. Site visits. And well, the way we do site visits was, for example, when we went to the Kimball Mental Hospital or whatever other physical structures visited, we'll be taken around, and in that process members will be asking questions about what they see. And once we're done with the physical inspection, then we have a meeting, we sit down, and we want accountability on what we've seen and what we have from the Auditor General. Say, but this is what we have. You say this is, it's cost you 300 million rand so far. You're supposed to finish it on such a day, or this structural defect, or this and that, who was, you know. So at a technical level, those were the two things that we did, and definitely did write our reports, submitted them to Parliament, and I think all our reports were adopted by the House.
Now, what I wanted to say, Chair, it's a good statement, but it's a very ambitious statement also. Parliament overall in how it does its oversight. We can end up being 20 committees at the same size and end up with the same type of story. And for me, is to look for consequences, and that's what we must look for. And I mean, but why I don't want to oppose it is because maybe it's good for members to go outside and see what's happening. But if I'm in public service and administration, I might go also on another type of committee. You might go on another group of the community, but you end up being 20 people going to the same spot. At the end of the day, the public doesn't benefit from what we do as Parliament overall, as an institution, when it comes to our own oversight. Well, we got that. We should admit. We've had an oversight model that has been lying somewhere where we've been promising each other that we need to finalize this document so that we know what we are dealing with. But as of now, it is an exercise that does say that we need a fish card for us to go outside. As Kuno is talking to you, but practically it doesn't have consequences to manage. It doesn't, it's without consequences. Mm-hmm. It's something that we are very ambitious about as members of parliament. It's a nice dream that we have, but it doesn't have consequences. I've known about it. I've gone to the defense committee, I've gone to all bases, but simply they don't have money. So that's what really seated with the end of the day. You become part of the complainant. So why have you not delivered? Why have you not done this? Why have you not done that? But at the end of the day, we write the report, it goes there, but no consequences are there. So it's a nice exercise.
I'm hearing that in your input, Honorable Boy, that you would want to see better collaboration between portfolio committees and telecommittees in making decisions about who's going where, so we don't have three or four different committees ending up in the same place. Okay, so that I think is something we can look at. It's consistent with the very first objective. The second part of your input was about, well, then we write the report and then what? Honorable Godi, in your input you talked about the Kimberley hospital and how much of what was the outcome from this committee's work ended up in resolutions which were adopted by the House. What are the things that we've learned from that journey that allow us to get to that point where those resolutions are adopted? That's point one. So that we can get best practice of what is it that went so well around this particular one that we can learn from. And then maybe let's, after that, think about once the resolutions have been adopted by the House, how do you make sure that the then what follows?
Well, if you know, without, if one were to take the Kimberley Mental Hospital, our visit has had very, very positive spin-off to that process. Firstly, when we arrived, the simple committees that are supposed to be established to oversee that project were not there. They were only set up after our intervention. Secondly, the pace of building, which had been very lackluster all along, picked up after our intervention. And thirdly, our visit and subsequent meeting actually exposed the challenge of the time frame that had been set to complete the hospital vis-a-vis the available budget. It became clear that there is no money to fund the completion of that hospital, and yet the department has set itself tight deadlines. And we had the national department and the provincial department to discuss this issue and insisted that they need to resolve the funding issue. So what I've learned from that engagement, and of course a whole host of other things that give impetus to what I think as a committee we still need to follow up on, the commitment that the NEC has made around involving the police, because it was clear that the core problem of that initial contract was the fact that some people were given preferential treatment where they did not have the ability to construct and were paid money when there was nothing for which they were being paid. So I think our being there and our being consistent around it led to those kind of things. Now, the question of when resolutions are passed and what, I think we noticed that as a committee and tried to address it this way. I think when we talked to objective number 5, we insist, I think in the last year of the fourth parliament, all our resolutions had time frames. We, at two levels, one, we requested that 60 days after the resolution is passed, the minister must respond and say these are the measures that we're taking to address these concerns. But beyond that, to say every quarter we must get a progress report so that we don't wait
until 12 or 18 months down the line. So that, because some of the things that must be addressed are not going to be addressed by a single act. It's going to be a series of actions. Now, and that is where now we then raise the question around the Speaker's office, because once resolutions are adopted by the House, they are owned by the Speaker's office. And we have raised on several occasions that there needs to be capacity in that office to track on resolutions of the House, not only of COPA, but on numerous and various commitments that ministers will make before Parliament. At some point we're told that the process develop that capacity. At some point we're told it's just 5 minutes to being switched on and all that. We don't know where it is right now. But what we did as a committee was to try and develop capacity within the committee, a tracking system. That if a resolution is adopted today, when is 60 days? So that we can check when is the next quarter, so that we can check. It was something that we were trying to build conceptually as we had it practically. I think it had its ups and downs because we didn't have time to see back and say, fine, where are we in terms of the responses? Yes, we did get responses, but I think in terms of being able to, as a coach, sit down and say, we have 6 resolutions, these are the 6 dates. How many departments have met the date, how many have not? I think we have not been able to. From the Speaker's office, I don't think that we have had anything to address that concern around resolutions passed by the House than what. So it is not only a scope of problem, but I think problem general to Parliament.
I think we'll need to come back to that, to those learnings when we deal with the Python class. But to conclude on four, Honourable Lynch, can I ask a question about the library that you spoke about? Now that you have the benefit of hindsight, what are the 2 or 3 things that you think that your Senate committee could have done differently?
I don't think there's much that could have been done differently. I think the issue that Honourable Gorty raises is the key issue. I mean, we did a report, we said timelines, 60 days, all that kind of stuff. It was accepted by the House, and that was the end of it. It then became the ambit of politics, of the particular government party to take action really at the end of that, because Parliament itself doesn't have the mechanism to follow up and do these things. And this is something we talked about year after year in our select committees, and I would absolutely agree with Honourable Gorty on that one. But in terms of the way we handled it, I don't think there's everything can improve, but I think that it's handled quite well.
Chairperson, in the first Parliament, government module, or governance module, was adopted by the House, and one of the key objectives or the main function was oversight. I mean, I'm just thinking out loud, I mean, why was presenting a committee after it has presented to the House and the report has been adopted by the House? What presents the committee to say after some time, right to the minister, or to the person who's supposed to be giving us the feedback? What's preventing it from writing to that person and getting feedback? I'm not sure, because I'm not sure what the rules are saying about that, but I don't think there's anything that will prevent us as members of Parliament or a particular committee to actually get back to the minister and ask, you know, the process on what we have signed up as we're doing oversight. Because when it goes to the House, when we agree with everybody, including the ministers or members of the cabinet.
And that's a very good point, and it really is critical. And that follow-up, if I just get back to the select committee example, we did on a regular basis. We'd get our reports back, the accepted in the House and so on, and we'd actually make follow-up visits to go and see whether, in fact, anything really happened. And sometimes it did, and sometimes it didn't. I mean, the intervention in Limpopo, we went up to Limpopo probably 5 times in the last 2 years of the last parliament, and we interviewed all the departments and the administrator who was appointed. So that follow-up with not just the minister is key, but it still, I think, as Honourable Gorty says, requires a formal system of dealing with those resolutions of ours.
No, sir. I think the other thing we also need to change our attitude, because what I'm hearing from the colleagues is, as soon as we deal with the report, we send it to Parliament, and it is the Speaker's issue. And if maybe we can change our attitude, because I think it's still our report, and we need to make a follow-up as this committee. Whether the House has resolved on the issue, the report was dealt with. That is at this level. And it is still our responsibility to make sure that we follow it, that is to whatever level. And if there is nothing happening that is at the Speaker's level, it is still our responsibility to insist that we submitted the report and we indicated that is the following areas. Up until now, that has not been done.
Thanks, Seth. Because there's no outsiders here, we call one family, maybe we can be provocative as well. You know, Chair, we do the same thing for 20 years and we expect a different result. 20 years we do the same thing and we expect a different result. Because somebody said that SCOPA can only write a resolution and wait for the House. Yeah. Now, it might mean a radical shift to what we're doing at SCOPA. Again, I'm going back to our comment of maybe we should prioritize, as we do everything else, but prioritize those that are problematic. In portfolio committees, we call the department of the minister every week if we have to. Why don't we agree at SCOPA that we sent a resolution in January, passed it in January, why don't we call the department back again in October whenever 6 months is up, just to deal with that? The reason why we don't do that, Chair, is because somebody said to us we can only work on the basis of an annual report of the AG. So it comes every 18 months, and we can only look at it every 18 months. There's nothing that stops us from whatever resolution we passed last year to call the department back, but nothing else but specifically to talk to us on the 5 or 6 resolutions or the steps they've taken to ratify those resolutions. And it's just been a practice that we've been doing for the past 20 years. So my suggestion is, over and above everything else everybody else is saying, is maybe we should have more than one meeting with these departments and say that we send you a resolution on the basis of the 2013 hearing. We want you to come back and to talk to us face-to-face in terms of what steps have you taken. There's no license that says we can only do it on the basis of an annual report or wait for the AG's next report. And half of them will come back and say to us, the next AG's report will show improvement. That's fine. But they can give us a verbal report in the interim. So my proposal, therefore, here is that over and above what members are doing, if they really are critical ones, let's not wait for the annual report and do it because we've been doing it for the past 20 years. Let's insist as a committee that we call them back for that item only. And let them talk to you. Even if it is 3 departments, all they're doing is giving us verbal feedback on the resolutions for the past 3 months. Because that would complement the theory that we've been doing up to now in terms of waiting for the speaker or waiting for the next AG's report. So for me, that's the proposal. That's how it's done for portfolio committees. Why are we not doing it in that fashion in scope? To call them back more than once. There's nothing that stops us from doing that.
Mr. President, we are looking for consequences. We should become wary as members of Parliament who want to, as Honorable Smith is saying, want to walk on the same path year by year. Do no consequences happen. You see, I would say now you are going to give it unauthorized expenditure. What are you going to do? You sit here, lament, and no progress. And that it will do the same thing. Is it what is the type of institution you want to build? Or is it something that you say because you were asking the Auditor General yesterday, come, tell us what are you doing when somebody is not able to perform. We're putting you under pressure until the check came in and neutralized us and says, no, you are a different institution. So it's going to work like that. That's what we are talking about. That it doesn't go beyond us, that we are looking for consequences. But Parliament, at the end of the day, must look for consequences, must look for a result. That if you continue building a Kimberley hospital and the ordinary people there are not getting it, why do I keep on visiting it and seeing it and leave with an impression that for any other human being, when you come, I would definitely clean my house and I hear that you are coming as my visitor. When you leave, I can go and put my shirts where I usually put them, and nothing happens for until I hear again that I will come around and I do the same thing. And this is what happens most of the time. That's why government is not able to reform and being able to get results. And for me, it's like, what is it that we should be able to do as a scope to be able to add and have consequences to what the things that people are promising and where people's money are being spent? And that's where I really, I don't have the solution now for the person. I'm still trying to think hard, you see, but sometimes you see, if, like where I'm coming from, the Public Service Commission, the most important question that I've asked the Public Service Commission, that very end of the day, you don't lose the Constitution to achieve your goals. You see, the Constitution is very clear that if somebody, you have written a report and you've given it to the executive, you give it to Parliament, what is the result? I don't think the Constitution is so quiet to all of us. And I don't think also that SCOPA should be seated in an environment of saying, we'll wait for Madam Speaker until she improves the office for us to have consequences. One of the things that Honorable Smith is now suggesting is that let's record this department. Let's deal with them more aggressively and look for results, you see. Because you can't have public work year by year doing the same mistake. Defense Committee, everybody comes and complains about the Defense Committee, I mean about public works, and all we seem to be in agreement with that. And then at the end of the term, we write the report. Maybe there should be something that we should talk to and say, let's change it to our members of Parliament. And the Honorable Member from the DA was saying that, tell us if there's something wrong with the rules, so that you could hear. That's what we as new members want to hear. Is there something that makes this committee not to be effective in getting decisions out of people? Where does the problem lie? So that we can deal with this problem. If it's in the rules, if it's in the Constitution, if it's in the law, or members of Parliament for that particular reason. And we don't have that sense. And that is my challenge. That's what I'm grappling with as I'm sitting here. We must get consequences if we would want South African public to be more stable. Because if we listen to the level of service deliveries that are taking place outside, are based on detail. They're not based on politics or whose party they like. It's on detail that there's no, I mean, place for them to go as a part. They are raising that matter. It's more practical things that people are facing. And we need to be able to sort out these things amongst ourselves here at this level where we are. Get consequences.
Maybe just to interrogate the particular point about consequences in terms of the things that people are practically concerned about. So the service delivery protest because of sanitation facility, and somebody saying, well, where are the consequences? What's the role of SCOPA in that regard? What is it about SCOPA, about this committee, that needs to work differently to close the gap? I know we're veering, but I'm honest.
Yeah, I think what the convent Mr. Smith has said is, I think is the way to go. That's partly what we learned when we were in Denmark, that if they pick up an issue in a department, they don't have a hearing and then say, go and fix it, we'll see you next year. But they stick and follow it up until it is fixed. But maybe we have so many departments and entities to deal with that we may need to choose to prioritize and say, this department and that department, these are the problems that we have identified, and we are going to chase after these or follow them, stick with them until they are resolved, rather than just talk to them today and you realize next year that the same problems
at the system, or even new ones that eventually occur. So I think that, for me, that is what might improve the situation. And like I said, our call on the resolution is to have time frames. What they kind of part of trying to say, let us have constant checks on whether there is movement or not. But maybe we can do it better by isolating a few key entities and departments and say, we're going to stick with you until you get this right.
I think that we got into a discussion about what is seen as objective 4 and 5 at the same time. Suggest that actually we're driving at the same real objective, which is to enhance the effectiveness of oversight. And Chair, I'm taking the comment you made, and Accountant General, I'm trying to put together that which you said as well. So if we have a strategic objective that says enhance the effectiveness of oversight by SCOPA, then what you say, then key elements of that, that will be the objective, and key elements of it about ensure that oversight visits are effective by collaborating with other committees, including portfolio committees and select committees in the planning of these things, ensuring that in all of our work, our resolutions have qualities that will allow them to be tracked effectively and on an ongoing basis. Ensure that all of our resolutions, whether they come out of oversight business or any other report we deal with, but all of our resolutions are followed up confidently, using capacity that we need to ensure we have a scope up, and even using the capacity in the office of the speaker. But nonetheless, understanding that our responsibility to ensure effective follow up on our resolution cannot be abdicated. If we need to do things differently, it would be that element of following up our resolutions and tracking them effectively, but also of calling departments that account us back for follow-up conversation, whether it's stuff that came up in annual report or an oversight visit or any other matter, but consistently have follow-up in our work. A key element of effective oversight will be having to prioritize our work, given that the volume could be easily overwhelming. But yeah, I hope you got that. Okay, so if we can merge the two, and then we will enhance the effectiveness of oversight. And then the sub elements will be effective oversight visits through effective collaboration. It will be follow-up on resolutions and tracking them. It will be follow-up conversations with those that must account and following things right through to the very end. It will also be prioritization of our work, given the volumes. Are we happy? Okay, I have two hands. Go ahead, Tim.
So, Chair, the Honourable Boy spoke about consequences, and I think at the end of the day, it's got to end up there. Every road has an end, somewhere. And so we can go and do oversight visits, we can go and then draft a report, we can go then, we can get a dotted by the house, we can follow up every month if we want to. But when we get to the point where we are just being ignored, or the officials and all are just not doing what we've asked them to do, where do we build in the mechanism of the actual accountability when that disciplinary letter is issued, or the summons is issued in a criminal court, or whatever the case would be? Where do we engage that? Please excuse me if I'm ignorant, because I'm just starting this process in SCOPA, but the question I need to ask is where does that actually end, and what is our mechanism to say, okay, you know what, after such a period of time, enough is enough, now we move to this, we've given you enough opportunities to play along, but now enough is enough. Because one of the things I did pick up in the legacy report is fairly lengthy periods of time that it takes for matters come in front of us to eventually an other side visit to eventually, and then you look in your status columns, and as in a lot of government that we're involved in, that status column doesn't change for a very long time. But I think we need to improve our effectiveness there. Thank you, Jack.
No, just saying, not offering a solution. I just do progress. I'm just saying that practically, Chair, if you say you know, every weekend this week, these days, we are entertaining ourselves with qualifications that's getting exposed, you see, that who is really qualified, you know. And let's get to the problem now, it's not just one person, everybody. But all these people, if you look at, they've been coming to the government, they've been coming to these committees, they've been reporting, they really look very nice when they do their presentation. Sadly now, as a country, sits with a lot of unqualified people, you see, working for government. Now I'm just saying, that's where this problem of consequences comes in, that can't we think more aggressively that what do we do now? If the chair can say something about within the constitution, within the law, is there something that is preventative? Or is it the only prescription that says that you should only write points? Is there nothing that has given you that if people don't get to comply, what do we do? I mean, look at the NPA. You'll be there soon. But the drama they are that the way the time they spend outside and not doing the work that they're supposed to be doing, you'll see that again with them here. And we'll be listening to the same story, the same tensions and everything. What do we do? I mean, this is where I'm trying to find that within your experience as the chair of this community, has there been ever an applying of your mind or applying within your collective of how what do we do to get consequences? If there's nothing, maybe you should solicit a legal opinion that could guide us. That what we are looking for this, Chapter 7. We must buy it. You see, I'm looking for that. So that we don't sit here and somebody's not qualified and you see. Those who are not being aggressive, we're not doing anything. You see, we'll do another 5 years, go on campaign, come back, do another 5 years. Nothing will ever be resolved. I'm just looking for that. That's all I'm looking for. Is there a solution in some of the things that I need?
But the chair, maybe we should start by saying the nature of the system is that parliament is persuasive. That's where we start. We really can't prescribe to the executive, generally speaking. But I do think we have tipped it. It's you know, because none of us are usual in this thing, it's very difficult to put it. But we do have tipped. I mean, the Public Finance Management Act, Mr. Gordy, you help me. I think Section 38 or something actually says that if the accounting officer has done something that is against the law, criminal charges can be pursued. It's there, it's a law. So we do have seen. We've not tested. That's the real problem. We've not tested it. Now, the difficulty is going to come in if we go back to the previous discussion. If you call the minister here, as you said earlier on, the law doesn't say the minister is accountable, it says the accounting officer is accountable. So the minister might be gross, but the only person, as I understand it, that you could do something if you really wanted to, would be the accounting officer, according to the Public Finance Management Act. You certainly wouldn't be able to get the minister fired by the power that we have currently, or something like that. So, yes, I think the PFMA does, I don't know, we might have tested in terms of exactly what would be a watertight case. But secondly, the difficulty we have, sir, is that we're a subcommittee of parliament. And I think for us to be able to go to court, I speak under correction, I think for us to be able to take anybody to court, would need the approval of the House. We wouldn't be able to, as a subcommittee of Parliament, be able to do it. We might be in agreement here, but you get to the House, and if it's overruled at the House at that level, then there might be nothing that we can do. That is why I'm sitting on really the relationship that we've held, even with the Speaker, whatever the case might be. It's going to be difficult. It will be a first time we're doing it. It will have dire consequences. Some of us probably won't have a job afterwards. Let me be quite frank with you. You fire somebody, you'll be fired. I'm talking about certainly from our side. So, these things are real. So we will not, some of us, be very career limiting, correct. Some of us might not. But I do think we need to test it. I really do think we need to test it. One, exactly what would make a watertight case, and two, what is the view of the deciding officer? Ultimately, they will be the ones that I think would have to take this thing to court. It can't be court. It would be Parliament charging accounting center of instance, another accounting office, another accounting center. You too, maybe. You could also, but it would be parliament. That's what I expect would be, but maybe we should test these things. Maybe we should test them. But, we do have to. We need to get a buy-in from the speaker, I suspect, a buy-in from most political party leaders, I suspect, if we want to pass it with the House, and we would need to have a tight legal argument. So those are the things that I think we would need to do if we want to test it, but it is doable, yes.
Thank
yeah, I think if the comrades have, I don't know to be if they have access to our annual performance plan 2012-2013. You note that in that plan we, to respond to that kind of frustration, had developed what we called an escalation model, meaning if the time frames come and pass, what do we do? We said, write to the minister and give him or her a particular time frame. If the minister does not respond, write to the leader of government business to say, this is the problem we're having with your minister. If he or she does not respond, we said, then we must take it back to Parliament, to the National Assembly. Because after all, we're a committee of the National Assembly to say we are unable to exercise our responsibilities because we are getting no responses. And it's a pity we don't have a legal mind, but I think there was talk about what is it that the House can do. Can the House pass motion of no confidence in the minister? Is there something that, yeah, something along those lines, to say, because after all, we are like committed to say, we're committee of the House. That is why we say our resolution belong to the Speaker, because a department only knows that the House has decided on something when the Speaker writes to the Minister. Before that, there is nothing. So, legally speaking, that's what it is. And now, the PFMA, this has been the accounting officer, and I know he threatened one accounting officer sometime with that loss. I'm not a lawyer, but I think the tricky part of that law says gross negligence. Now, gross in legal interpretation becomes a minefield. What is gross? Is it 5 million? Is it 100 million? Is it a million? When you go to court and say, no, this is gross negligence. What constitutes gross negligence? But maybe, you know, we need to have some legal people looking at the various pieces of legislation, not necessarily PFMA, other pieces of legislation that deals with issues around corruption. What leeway do they give us? But this talks about negligence, where the accounting officer is going to do certain things to prevent financial loss to the state. Thank you.
No, given that the church is answered, can he then go look at the law proper and give us a proper guide as we get to what has been here, so that we can start engaging and lobbying, and people have to understand what that it means to come to COPPA and not being able to be honored, you know. I mean, the approach starts first, but people must know that when you, as what Vinjaj has outlined, we are able to use and be able to set input. These are the consequences of what I'm going to face. And we have to put it in front of the speaker. She must be knowing that there's a point where it's becoming much difficult, that you can't be dealing with public works in the way you've been dealing with it. They come and repeat themselves because they've repeated themselves last year. They've repeated themselves other past 20 years. I mean, it's the same story. Something has to happen. Somebody has to make the decision. I do think, with no fear of, I sit on the monitoring evaluation, that ministers themselves are going to face a lot of consequences. The president's even gone to a level of saying that level of them making sure their performance record is being viewed by the public is going public. Parliament will have a lot of say over that. How is the minister beginning to perform in their own responsibility? Because Chef Khadel was responsible, he's also going to be able to account. So governance is changing, it's not stagnant. there's a lot of dynamism taking place, and we should deal with this environment. And we should not sit here on the basis that the model that we use and the footage that we had in the past doesn't mean that we should not relook at what we're faced with, because the broader political situation is changing. South African public is not, it's a little bit not state, because it wants consequences. It wants to hear what they say to each other, what are we doing within the institution, you see. But I'm saying that unless and until there's a person of the committee goes at another length of really getting to go to detail of understanding what do you do with consequences, I mean when somebody is not really doing what is the effect of that particular institution, which is the department. We leave the minister to the president, because the constitution is very clear, the president appoint, we don't appoint. But to do with officials that are accounting to us, there we do have the authority. I don't think we should be wishy-washy about it. They make recommendations that are very quite informed. I mean, to talk to the speaker, and we can all be seated here and engaging the speaker to find a solution to what would become a bigger problem, you see.
I guess then what we say is, in the context of these resolutions and trying to drive quality resolutions, we're going to have to rely on strong legal support and legal advice, because it's going to have to be on a case-by-case matter. We'll use the escalation model to try and drive action in the right places. But for us to have quality resolutions, we need the support of a strong secretariat and strong legal advice. Did you want to say something? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to clarify something. And this is a question to our chair and to my more senior colleagues who have been in Scope Rip and Lumber the Lion. As a private citizen, if I perceive crime in any way, I can go to the police station and report it. Okay. I don't have to be the complainant, I don't have to be the victim. anything that limits me as a member of Scope, that if I perceive a criminal action by whoever during the course of our work, individually for me to go to a police station and report it. Is there anything that prevents me from doing that as a Scope member? Any rules, any inclusive rule, whatever the case may be, that that's privileged information, whatever the case may be. If I have guidance on that, because that might be an interesting thing to consider. I'm not trying to say we won't become mavericks, but you know, maybe possibly when you talk about consequences, honourable boy, you need to get the rhythm of that, and maybe somebody needs to stick their neck out. So if I could just get some clarity on that.
No, I think, as Comrade indicated, I think in any instance where we are convinced that there was cross-legislation, at a committee we cannot by ourselves decide that we're going to open a criminal case, because then it will need to have the sanction of the House. I say we're a committee of the House. We do work on behalf of the House and report to the House. So, a member of this committee, in his or her personal private capacity, I think is free to defend any criminal act or to take action against any perceived criminal act. So there will be nothing that would limit the honourable member from opening, taking the work that we do, because the information that we have here is public information, unless it is so stated in terms of the rules of parliament. If it's stated that this is secret information, must not be divulged, then no member is allowed to communicate it to the public, to the media, or to use it in any criminal proceedings. But if it is not classified as such, it is public information that can be used by anyone. Wait a minute.
Listen, I'm sorry, just a small point apart from the debate we've been having, just for clarity for myself as well.
We spoke about oversight visits. The committee decides that they need more information and they want to go to a place and see for themselves what is happening. I'm just wondering, and maybe there is an existing answer that I'm just not aware of, but if a department feels that they're going to enter into some kind of contract which is very big, they know that there's going to be questions further on down the line, they might want to have the committee involved up front. If they want to approach the committee to say, let's say it's the arms deal, that there's a new arms deal coming out, we know what happened in the past, we want the committee to be involved, we want you to go on fact-finding missions with us, that kind of thing. Is there a way that they can approach? Do we have some kind of mechanisms that we can deal with to say the committee doesn't have the capacity right now, or if you approach us, we will consider, you know, something like that? I'm just wondering if there's some kind of procedure that can be followed that departments should know about, maybe.
So this would be more proactive in-transaction type monitoring.
So if, as a department, we rather want to approach SCOBA, you know, say, if you walk the journey with us, it will help you understand what we're trying to achieve, and there might be less questions we have to appear before you because you know what we've gone through. So the department from their side approach the committee rather than the committee approaching the department. I don't know, maybe there is a procedure. I just wanted to have clarity on that.
Yeah, no, I want to say that it is not something that I have experienced in my life here. Nor do we, am I aware of a pre-existing tool to deal with that. So if, at this point, use my common sense that as long as we're talking about explaining processes and not saying one to purchase arms in China, can the person accompany us who wants to, you know, and as long as the department appreciates that, if for example, you were to come before the committee and explain yourself, and we say fine, we will not say fine, we accept, we say fine, we'll help you, so that we're not limited from raising uncomfortable questions later after the transition has taken place. I don't think there will be a problem, as long as that is the understanding.
The biggest compromise, Chairperson, in the arms deal, when the portfolio committee got involved in this type of an exercise. When they were looking for monitoring, they couldn't accuse each other because they were all wine and dining by the same people. And when Parliament was looking for them, they couldn't tell us what is going on or what. And that was the end of the system, you see. But what happened to today is politicians, is officials, is everybody. But they're all being wined down by the same people. So if you want to compromise the system, do that. Never take it. Until its problems started like that. We're looking for the committee in Parliament to ask questions. The committee are very busy overseas. Says, what is it doing? So it's monitoring the things that are going to be bought. But how do you buy it? I mean, how do you monitor when it's not even bought? Where? But it's not our duty. So your personal needs and everything started crossed. That's why it becomes a complex problem with the South African scenario. So if you want to follow that route, in my absence, I would never want to go that route. I would duck out quickly.
Question? Okay,
yeah. Although I'm not a guru on the rules, but I think it will be as fair as a conclusion of the separation of powers of saying, because you in essence, be saying that Parliament must both be a player and a referee at the same time. So I think it will be a serious conflation of the separation of us. Surely, I don't think it will be appropriate for the committee to take that role.
Colleagues, I'd like to... we still have one other objective to deal with, but I'd like to propose that we take a 10-minute break stretch, and then we come back, finish that one, and then aim to conclude. Are we comfortable? Okay. Thank you. Honourable Member, can we push on? We've got a bit of time pressure, and we have, I think, another 10 minutes to go, and then we'll be able to wrap up. On the screen, we've reworded the strategic objectives given the discussions we had earlier in the day. And I guess in the next session, you'll be able to conclude on the key tactics that will drive these objectives. The last one that we have not yet spoken about talks to considering all annual reports that are tabled. SCOPA is required to deal with the financial reports, the audit reports of all state institutions in this sphere. And be there that they receive a clean audit, a qualified audit, an unqualified audit, the same, etc. We also spoke earlier on about needing to prioritize our work. We needing to talk to the clusters of government and finding ways to organize ourselves together with other portfolio committees and the lead committees so that we target proper work instead of being overwhelmed by volume. The Accountant General also made reference to the need for active prioritization of our work. I would like to propose that we specify here that we will prioritize our work so that we deal with all nature of audit reports and we target those key programs that we think are going to be important. Are people comfortable with that? Okay.
I'm just wondering how we're going to determine that. What would be the mechanism? Would we consult on which ones are important and which ones aren't? Are we going to set certain guidelines in terms of materiality?
Okay. The how, I'd like to open up the room, but I think what I'm saying is that we would, some of the reports we would look at and process merely by way of noting, and others we spend more time on. So the priority in terms of where we spend our time, but at least we're submitting our mandate in terms of applying our minds to the higher sphere. The how is a question that's been raised. Can I open that up in terms of just either indicating whether you're comfortable around an objective that says we will spend time prioritizing our work to ensure that we have a can deal with everything, but also we are responsive to things as when they arise, including programs, key programs as identified through collaboration with other committees and with the classes. Thank you, Honourable Smith, and then Honourable Good.
Maybe we should give it to the chairperson. I thought that it was standard practice, Chairperson Gordy, that we prioritize on the historic basis and for that. We know after 20 years which committees, I mean which departments, that's just troubled departments. We know that. We also know which departments might have big money items or just big money budgets. And then, of course, others we know. I mean, there's others that have forever been clean or just are very small. And I thought, Gordy, that at some point you would probably take us through how you've worked in the past in terms of working, and then it would cover that. But yes, just before Gordy comes in, you can't do SCOPA unless you prioritize. You're never going to give the same amount of attention to all the reports we get. Whether we like it or not, we're going to have to prioritize. I'm even arguing that we're going to have to prioritize even more stringently this year, Mr. Gordy, than last year if we want to do the follow-up type of things. But yeah, I would imagine risking contradicting what you did last time, but I would imagine that we would have to focus on those that we know are problem children. I mean, as an example, so Correctional Services has never had anything but a qualified report for the past 20 years, as an example. And I think there are a few others that have those type of things. Public Works, we know, has been a problem, not in its and of itself, but because of the effects had with all other committees. I mean, those are the type of debates we have in terms of who we should prioritize. Others are, we have not seen them for a long time, because we don't see everybody. We might want to say, we've never seen these three entities in the past 15 years, the past 10 years. Let's call them in. I mean, it's really, I thought, Mr. Goy, that's how we should do our prioritization, but we will be led by you and how you've done it in the past.
Yeah, no, I think complete the sentence. that objective, what it essentially says, that's why it says considering process. And process may not necessarily mean theory. I think what we were trying to say there was that it appears this scope only deals with the dirty laundry. And whenever we send reports to Parliament, it's about the troublesome party. And yet you'll find a lot of reports that are unqualified, that are clean. And we're saying we need to process those, we need to consider those. But in terms of our hearings, Comrade Benson is right, the logical thing is to prioritize, and your prioritization is informed by a number of variables, from your budget, the length of time that the department has not been in a proper position, or if you look at the number and the type of qualifications in that report. Those are things that they would inform how to do that. But that is what the groups, each group will be doing, and they we have great reports, but we think we want this to be the first five, and that group say this is what we want to be our first five, and then we say, as a committee, how do we prioritize out of these two groups, have our own priorities, so that if we don't have much time, at least we must have done this three or this five or this ten. If we have more time, we'll include the others.
You see, Chair, yesterday when we said there was a digress by departments, that is, one time they were very good, the next thing we got 60 of whatever the number was, there they were not performing again. For me, that would be one thing that we must look at. You see, the one part. You see, if you are going to do with small business, which has not yet been created as a department, practically, that's a department that is at the site, is what the public appreciates. You see, if you give human settlement, self development, these are things that we must consider, you know. But if, I mean, I know with the tender of social development, I hear from my mother that when she doesn't get paid or when she's standing in the queue, the type of challenges that they're going through. I'm still saying that there should be that consideration in the area of criteria, that there are those ones that we should not just walk away from, but that deal with the day-to-day life of our people. And then there are those that are really technical, and then there are those that, come, Honorable Simpson would say, they have not been attended to for years. There's really things of code. But our responsibility should be to, that how do we make sure that the public purse is dispensed properly, and how do we make ourselves quite visible around that area. So maybe also it comes to the issue of capacity and how we should deal with that. We should have a little bit of insider from you. That's what the chair used, insider information, like what is the capacity, what would make you not to be able to get all departments to account to SCOPA, you see, which is the responsibility of SCOPA in terms of the constitution. Why would you allow such an element to become part of the system, that there are people who have never been called to come and account about their expenditure? If you can talk to us about that, but for me it's very much important that partly of what you should, even if, I mean, how new this small business is, we should be able to make them to have the capacity to be able to deliver around that particular area of work. If we leave them, it's going to be also our own consequence. I mean, where we'll, at the end of the day, when it's gone down, then it starts calling that department to come and account. We should have that type of an attitude. That those are dealing with the public every day. I mean, you can't have the defense force going through the experiences that they're going through in the manner that we repeatedly bring the same type of problem when ordinary soldiers are sleeping in places that it's such a cruel department, nobody takes care of them. That must be done in how you relate to that particular department. I'm just saying those type of things, those type of attitudes should become endemic in the way we're trying to approach. Who is it that you want to prioritize within the work that you want to do? You see, it's difficult the intelligence community, but with the police, we must have sense that the police are really to hold on to begin delivering. Where they are good, we get them to get rid of work quite properly. Rather sitting with a lot of criticism coming to the department in the manner. But they get the biggest incomes, the biggest budget. But the results are not there, you see. So we need to have that type of an attitude, that which one are we focusing on, and how do we deal with them? These are not dealing with our people day to day. It is how do we make them become more functional. So that digress that is mentioned by the auditor general. We should find out, also find more dealing with that particular development. You can't have manager, last year was good, this year certain things have taken a different time. And the same mental payment, and nothing is being said about that particular thing. So there would be where we would have to change how we want to do things within a community.
Yeah, thank you very much. So what I'm hearing is that there's support for looking at all reports, considering all reports, and spending time on prioritizing so that we're not blind to key areas of risk. So may I suggest that as a committee, we need to spend time understanding how to prioritize and agreeing on key priorities for any given term. The conversations we had earlier on about working with other oversight committees, working through the clusters, looking at audits over and above those that have poor audit outcomes, but more broadly, looking at particular programs that, as the Accountant General referred to, but you'll need to spend time figuring out how to prioritize, because you don't have limitless resources in terms of time, in terms of leadership capacity, and yet you have this huge responsibility. So can we leave the objective as it is, and in the next session you'll be able to drill down to the areas that you need to attend to? Chair?
Yeah, can I just also add that the point around the amount of work at our disposal requiring therefore to prioritize should also talk to the need for us to have as much time as possible to process our work. Towards the end of the fourth parliament, we were grappling with should we be using Fridays, should we be using afternoons as well. So I'm just saying these things that we need to grapple with, come to an agreement and see how it can assist our work.
You see, if you want to be honest and frank with you, the African National Congress has got 149 members. But out of taking from our learned friend, Honorable Vincent, we've got 71 members that are active, certain members of Parliament that are going to be here. So some of them have gone to the legislature, some of them have gone to the speakers and all those things. So we have agreed as the party that Friday is a working day and that's how it should be viewed. And we're very clear, every member of the AHC knows that. That's why we're 666 and cleared our mandate that wherever we are, we have to do as much as we can within our capacity to be able to deliver and get everything we done. So work from that line of march. Don't work with the doubting mind that ANC members. ANC members have been asking maybe we'll do two left ourselves to make sure that we do our work more effectively and efficiently. And we have to spend more time within our parliamentary precincts. We do have our constituency work, there's all those things. So from where we are, we're quite clear that we have come to do work here. We've not come to look at solutions of how to target type and not come to work. I hope you work from that line of march.
On a lighter note, I sincerely hope you guys are not 666. They are scaring me.
Yeah, no. I wanted to say that reassurance is very important. I will not let it pass without really underlining it. Because the simple reality that we catch up with us is that there's so much work to do. And you see, I used to say to colleagues in the fourth parliament, we can't ride on the legacy of this committee. We must make our own history. People think and know SCOPA to be a committee of people who work much harder than the average member of parliament. But I've always been worried that and I'm bringing this to APEC, I've always been worried that I think we're losing that spirit. So I think there's a need for a mindset change to say, now I'm in scope. This is what it means in terms of work. So yeah, thank you very much for that comment. We need to work. There's a lot of work to do. We just have to do it for our own sake, for ourselves, for our country, for Parliament. That's it.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think we will then need to wrap up. I know that we've got time pressures. I think it's a good note to conclude on. One that says that this committee has a lot of work that it needs to make sure it does. Its mandate is clear, it is large, and it needs to obviously have a plan and also be responsive as areas of risk arise. What we will do, Chair, just to wrap up from our side, is here, I will match the first circles about the attributes to these objectives so that when you go into your next session, you have that, so that the two elements we spoke about today, you at least you have that on one picture, and then you can then set about the work of planning your initiatives for the next year and then also looking at the five-year horizon. Thank you very much for your opportunity to work with you this morning. I look forward to working with this committee as well as with our colleagues from the National Treasury and of course with many of you in the other portfolio committees, and good luck for the term. Thank you.
Right. I think we are done, comrades. I want to thank National Treasury for having been here and just to say that there were times that I'm raising this so that it can be corrected. When during hearings we have officials from your office, and when issues arise, say, no, I'm not the person dealing with the issue. So that it does not just become another trip, just to have National Treasury there, and not have the right people who can give answers at that point in time. But thank you very much. So we'll meet next week.